I didn't know if I should share the story about when I was getting, I think I was getting a massage and I got this like vivid image of you swimming in a pool. And I was like, I should reach out to Walter. And I was like, I don't know if he's going to think this is creepy. And you were like, it's so good to hear from you. But it was just so funny that
You never told me about me swimming in a pool as a visual. I'm glad you thought about me when you got a massage. I take that as a massive compliment. That's really sweet of you. Zara, it's so nice to see you. And for those who are listening, you won't see this, but we both appeared in black today. I don't know what happened, but there must have been a memo somewhere.
It was a black vibe.
It's you know what? It's so funny. You and I always feel like we're so connected, and it's so easy just to sit down and have a chat. It's just like I think we're always on this frequency. But it's good. It's good to see you. How's your son?
He's doing great. He's sassy as ever. He's about to be 5.
I know. I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
Time is wild.
It is wild how time flies. And look, you know, we have so much to cover today, but it's like really good to see you. Like, we got so many requests for more, so here we are. And I just wanted to maybe we talk about something really interesting today. And this is why I would love this. You were the first person that really came to mind when this topic was discussed here, and it was about berberine. So berberine is obviously a huge topic when it comes to the health and wellness world. It had its moment on TikTok, and I'm always a bit dubious about, you know, those things that having their moments and are almost born, when, if you will, in social media. But when we actually looked at berberine and the amount of clinical studies and its history, it's a really fascinating ingredient. So I'm really passionate about it. The more I learned, the more I was like, you know, this is actually one of those trends we need to talk about a bit more, because there's some legit science behind it. And what really surprised me the most, and this is really when I thought, like, this is really a topic I want to discuss with Zara, is like gut health. Because everybody thinks about berberine as they call it nature's Ozempic and whatever it is. I mean, I got, you know, somebody said to me, actually, if you want to call it nature something, it's more like nature's metformin. But like, that's a topic for another, we'll talk about that later. But let's start with the gut health piece, because most people think about berberine as this sort of like, as they say on, you know, on social media, it's called nature's Ozempic, right? So that, you know, where's this all coming from? What's its history? What is it? I have so many questions. I don't know where to start, but why don't we start with the basics and say, like, what is actually berberine?
Yeah. So I've been using berberine in my practice and was kind of introduced to it in the functional landscape for the gut. So when it started to go viral as this blood sugar regulator, I was surprised, because I've always used it for gut health. But just like you said, there's so much amazing research on it. And it's a really impressive compound. I think technically it's an alkaloid, but it's a compound that has massive benefits on the body in many different systems. So like you said, it regulates blood sugar. But what I always historically used it for was modulating the microbiome and decreasing pathogens in the microbiome. So that's where I was. It was always part for me of a gut protocol. And it's so fascinating, because not only does it decrease pathogens, but it also can improve and feed certain bacteria. So it's this very
This is the part that really confused me, because when I heard people say it's like a natural antibiotic, if you will, right? Like it kills certain bad bacteria, if I'm not mistaken. But how does it know not to kill the good ones, right? So it's like, do we know anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the same thing with an antibiotic, right? Like an antibiotic doesn't know, it's not selective in what it's killing. It's just kind of eliminating it's eliminating bacteria. That's what it does. And so with berberine, I think what's really interesting about it is that since it's an alkaloid, it also has a positive effect. So while it's decreasing biofilms, that's one of its primary kind of functions, is it can decrease the biofilm on a bacteria and also eliminate some pathogenic bacteria, but it can also feed certain bacteria. So it's very just specific in what it's doing outside of our control, right? Like we always think like, oh, I'll do these things, but like the body is very intelligent, and the way it utilizes things is super interesting.
So tell me a little bit about the history of berberine, like, because I think you find it in traditional Chinese medicine, for example. You find it in Ayurveda. So it's definitely, you know, it has a cultural relevance across the world, if you will. It's been used now here, but like it has been around for a long, long time. And, you know, its origins really come to from alternative medicine, if you will. And I'm just curious, you know, what do you know about the background of berberine and like, you know, how has it been used traditionally and, you know, where do we see this going?
Yeah, I mean, the background of it, I believe it's derived from a bush. So it's a plant medicine, which is kind of where everything has started. Like everything has been derived or studied or taught to us from plants. And then we're always going into the lab and trying to isolate the active compounds. But berberine is that active compound that has been derived from a plant. So it's really, there's been many uses for it, for gut health, for blood sugar regulation, for decreasing inflammation. Like it's one of those just pervasive, really supportive plants that has a lot of impact.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. Like in you know, we use an extract. Our extract comes from I believe the Indian bark tree. So yes, you're right, it's plant-based. And we looked back a little bit and like the earliest documentation about berberine, I believe, is like 3,000 years ago. It's like it's really, really interesting. And it was used for gut health, you know, because it's an antidiuretic, if you will. So it helps you, like if you have a bit of a loose stool, and it has these properties of fighting back bad bacteria. I mean, that's really where it came from. So I think it's really fascinating. And as I said, you know, Ayurveda mentions it in traditional Chinese medicine as well. And then later on, the blood, you know, glucose level management. I mean, that is something that people got really interested in. So, you know, it got isolated from golden seal, a bit of history there. That was the first time in like as a compound in 1917. So that's where it comes from. And Oregon grape as well. So, you know, you're right. It's like, you know, it's definitely all over the plant world. But let's fast forward to 2025. I can't believe that's the year in which we are. It's like, you know.
Just in 1917.
Yeah. So there are over 77 clinical studies that speak to the benefits of berberine. It helps with glucose levels, something we discussed already, but like also type 2 diabetes, insulin resistance, GLP-1 production, and as we said, gut health. So how does it really do all these things, right? You know, like, for example, let's speak about the GLP-1 piece for a second. You know, what does it do to help with GLP-1 production?
With berberine, since it's such an important compound for gut health, and with GLP-1 being made primarily in the gut, when you are enhancing the function of the gut microbiome, you're improving the capacity of your body to produce GLP-1. So they kind of are synergistic in that way, in that if you can stabilize blood sugar control, and they have a lot of similar functions, that you're going to enhance that GLP-1 production, because berberine and GLP-1, when you look at carbohydrate metabolism, they're doing similar things. Like they're improving the efficiency of metabolism. They're increasing insulin sensitivity. So they kind of function similarly, but they're in different mechanisms, because one is an alkaloid and one is a hormone. So they're having these different actions, but they have a lot of similar impact. So it's really cool to see how they kind of work side by side.
And, you know, we mentioned the gut health already, but like, let's talk about more specific, you know, gut concerns, such as like bloating, for example, or if you may suffer from irritable bowel syndrome. I know it's a very complex topic. We spoke about this in the previous podcast, that there's more to it. It's sort of like, you know, but let's say regularity for a second, right? Let's say I'm suffering from diarrhea a little bit. Can berberine actually help with that? And if so, like, is there any scientific evidence that demonstrates its efficacy?
Yeah, so I think the evidence you'll find is really in its ability to be an antimicrobial and a biofilm disruptor. And when you have diarrhea, what I've seen in my practice is oftentimes there can be these pathogenic bacteria that are overgrown. So there's certain good bacteria that are low, and then certain ones that can be more irritating, like Disulfafibrio is one I see a lot, Streptococcus, those can cause diarrhea. So if you can rebalance the gut microbiome and clear out some of that pathogenic overgrowth, you're going to improve the ability of just poop to be made more regularly and not have those bouts of diarrhea. And also with that decrease in inflammation you're going to get from berberine, that's also super helpful. So it's just helping to improve the overall ecosystem of the gut, which would clearly help with diarrhea.
And then let's move to, like, you know, glucose level management. And it's often recommended, again, in TCM. And there's some studies around that topic as well, around, you know, type 2 diabetes and the benefits of berberine. Walk me through that a little bit as well, because I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you want to take berberine with a meal that, you know, if you have a meal that has obviously carbohydrates, it's really good to take it with that meal, because then it really does work its wonders when it comes to those sugar level spikes post that meal. So talk to me about that a little bit more.
Yeah. So one of the mechanisms of action, one of the things that it does is it slows down that breakdown of carbohydrates, similar to what we see in fiber, is it's just slowing down the way that our body is breaking down and releasing sugar into the bloodstream. So it's really efficient in that, which then improves insulin sensitivity so that our cells can take up that sugar. Because we can have all this sugar floating around in our bloodstream, and if our cells aren't going to do anything with it because they've been exhausted and they just can't function properly, then it's not going to work. So having that berberine also helps those cells to be able to kind of like wake up and do their job and say like, oh, sugar, you can come in and now we can use you for all the important bodily functions that we need it for.
It's, I mean, honestly, like, I've been trying it out. I was really curious, right? I'm always curious about these things. And this may sound really strange, but I have a feeling my vision has gotten better as well since I've taken berberine. Can that be those glucose spikes that impact your vision? I don't know what I'm talking about here, but honestly, that's like a really strange side effect. A side effect, but like a positive, you know, I've witnessed actually.
Well, if you think about, somebody explained this to me once when I was working in the hospital, and it stuck with me because I think it's such a fascinating visual. But when you have high blood sugar, it's like having little shards of glass in your bloodstream and bumping into all of your organs. They're bumping into your eyes. They're bumping into your kidneys. So over time, it becomes destructive. So if you are then able to utilize that sugar more effectively, why not? It could totally improve your vision.
I'm not making a claim here. I'm just like, you know, big disclaimer. Like, we're not making a claim here. I was just like, this is really, I mean, this is strange. And I'm, you know, I always like to also then validate when you take these, you know, on these micronutrients and see what your blood work looks like afterwards, you know. So I'm like always interested in from that perspective. But that was definitely something I noticed very quickly. It's like, oh, that's really strange. And then, of course, there's this weight management benefit, right, that everybody's talking about. And I think that's why it got its reputation of like nature's Ozempic. And that's really when it had its moment on TikTok and all that. Like, what's your perspective? Do you think that term is correct, or and would you recommend berberine to support someone in their weight loss journey, if you will?
If it's helping regulate blood sugar, then it is going to impact weight loss. It's not going to be a magic bullet, but it is going to be part of the conversation and part of the strategy and part of the tools that someone can use when you're looking at weight loss. Because weight loss is not a black and white journey. It's not easy. It's not like just, we used to say like, just calories in, calories out. And it's not about a calorie. There's so many more complexities with that. So I think anything that you can build into your toolbox when you're on a weight loss journey is beneficial. And when you're regulating your blood sugar, that's going to help everything, because excess blood sugar is going to be stored in the liver, the muscles, and then when there's too much, it goes into fat cells. So it's very directly connected.
And I'm not sure this is true or not, but I heard it's particularly good for belly fat. Is that true? Is it sensational or not? I mean, like or visceral fat, as it's called, right? That's the technical term.
I don't think that I could say directly correlates to visceral fat, just because like it's going to help overall fat, which will help visceral fat. So then I could see where someone could be like, and it helps visceral fat, because it's not untrue, but it's not targeted.
I see. Okay. So I must just want to clarify this because we get all these questions all the time, and there's and it's really hard. Also, I don't know how you find this, but you're bombarded with so much information, and specifically once you start being interested in signaling to social media accounts that you're interested in a topic, and the amount of information you're getting, which is, you know, all over the place, it can be wild. So this is really, I think, part of the reason why we're talking to you today as well, to help us clarify some of these things and really digging into the science behind something. But talk to me about other factors that help with, you know, weight management, other than, you know, you mentioned lifestyle factors, for example. Like, you know, what are the kind of things? And, you know, again, we always want to take a holistic approach to wellness and don't say this is your one silver bullet and everything else, nothing else matters really. Let's talk, you know, you mentioned Burberry being one tool in the toolkit, but what are the other things that you always, like, you know, suggest when you work with your clients?
Stress management, nervous system regulation, eating all of the colors of the rainbow on a daily basis, looking at vegetable and fruit intake. Those are just like very foundational pillars. And then checking in with your body, seeing what your body is saying, not dismissing those things as crazy. Like even just you with your eye, I'm like, yes, that's valid. Like if something is improving with your vision, then that's real for you and your body. And that's important because I think we can often feel very like dismissed and, you know, not, at least the people that I support with digestive issues can feel that sensation of, you know, oh, it's crazy, or, you know, I'm just not being heard. So I think it's really important to honor the body. And another tool that I like to have in that conversation, blood work, yes, very good, but a glucose monitor. That has been something I would say in the past 5 years has really come on the scene in an accessible way. You can get it through insurance if your A1C is elevated, but looking at what you're eating and how it's directly impacting your blood sugar in real time is invaluable. It's a game changer. So even when you're thinking about like, should I take berberine? Is it helping? You can measure that. You can take berberine with a meal. You can take it without a meal and you can see how does it impact blood sugar spikes. So I think that's another tool that I try and incorporate as much as possible. Because data is power, data is knowledge, data is clarity.
Yeah, and I think you're right. It starts with understanding, right? Understanding yourself. And we're not all created equal. And there may be certain things that really impact us while they don't impact many others. And that's often the hard part, right? Like there's obviously scientific studies, but there's also like your personal experience, which may not have been studied, and like finding a balance between the two. And I like that suggestion about glucose monitors because it's an objective measure. Yeah. You know, it's a measure on you, and you can see, and it's quite extraordinary how much of an impact you can actually get after taking berberine for a couple of weeks. But yes, I'm a huge fan of these kind of tools as well, where you can actually see what does this do to me in real time. And it's almost like in psychology, it's about patterns, right? And once you identify the patterns, then you can actually solve the problem, if you will. As opposed to just trying to paint over it. So I think this is a super powerful suggestion, and I really recommend it to everyone who would like to manage their glucose level specifically, to consider that and, you know, and see what happens. It's a fascinating journey. We spoke about antimicrobial activity from berberine, which is amazing. We spoke about modulation of the gut microbiota. We spoke about protection of against a leaky gut, actually. Is there anything else around gut health you want to mention when it comes to berberine?
The role it plays in inflammation is really important as well, because it's impacting the microbiome, but it's also actively decreasing pro-inflammatory cytokines. So that's another very important role that it plays, because when you decrease inflammation, everything in the body is going to work more efficiently. And even with weight loss, when you're inflamed, your body retains a lot of water. So it's fascinating when I see people reduce their inflammation and then all of a sudden they're like, and I lost 10 pounds in a week. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing. And it's water weight, because we're just retaining all this water. So as you start to decrease the inflammation, you will start to notice changes in your body. And it's really, yeah, really impactful.
And obviously, you know, I think any conversation about any micronutrient should be about the pluses and the minuses. So I'm curious whether there are any side effects people should be aware of when they take berberine, and how much berberine do you recommend people take?
Well, there's always the potential for side effects. And that's why I I keep going back to like checking in with your body, because if you're operating from the idea, well, someone told me I should do this, so I should just, you know, be strong and push through. If you're feeling or experiencing something, take note of that and then stop taking it. So like you can see things like diarrhea or even constipation on the other end of that, bloating, like those are things that can kind of clue you in to maybe this isn't working, and then take it out, see how you feel. And if your symptoms go away, then try something else. There's many other alkaloids in the market, other plants that are magical. So I really always just kind of have people tap into that and never dismiss what is coming up for you sensation wise.
And do you see sometimes people that take it and then they may experience a few side effects, but after a couple of days they get used to berberine and then it's fine actually? Is that something that can happen as well?
Yeah. So there's a tolerance window for sure. But again, if it becomes to the point where it's like uncomfortable versus unmanageable, that's an important thing to kind of lean into. And also like knowing how long you should take it. I think Hum does a really good job with the support from the dietitians and also the recommendation saying like, you know, take this. If you have any questions, you can always reach out to your team as well, which is really helpful. So yeah, there can be that kind of adjustment period. So like, take note of that. But again, if it becomes problematic, I'm always like, just stop it.
I hear a lot that, you know, pay attention to your own body and like see what works for you. That's really the most.
Berberine is one of those, like, I use a variety of supplements with people and I've used many different supplements for many different years. And berberine is one that I don't typically see have a big negative reaction. Like people don't typically react poorly to it. Things like prebiotics are a little bit trickier because they can create bloating, but berberine is pretty well tolerated.
Yeah, that's super helpful. Look, I mean, I'm a huge fan, but again, there are people who report like rapid gastric emptying as a result of too much berberine, for example, which is why I think that 1200 mg dose is a pretty good one to start with per day. And then you can obviously work your way up. But that's where we see a lot of the scientific evidence and around that dosage. And we always recommend starting there. Not less, because I think less, like there's, you know, the scientific evidence is a bit weaker. There are less studies. And I'm a huge fan of like having not just one study suggesting something, but several. So that's what we always recommend. Let's talk about like big trends in health and wellness and go to our well yes and well no section. And I have two, and would love to get your take on those. So my well no is losing weight automatically makes you healthy. So that's definitely a big well no for me, because I don't equate weight loss with health. But I'm just curious, what's your take?
Quick weight loss is never going to be ideal, because oftentimes if it's quick, it's not sustainable, because you can, you know, not eat for a week, lose a lot of weight, but are you creating sustainable change? And in the nutrition world, we say a pound a week is healthy.
Okay.
You're trying to lose weight. It's like 3,500 calories. If you decrease 3,500 calories in your diet per week, then you can, in theory, expect to lose a pound a week. And that's ideally healthy.
So a pound a week means like I need to start thinking about my summer holiday now, I suppose, but in April it's like, okay, let me see how many pounds I'm gonna shed prior.
Yeah, you can work backwards.
But no, that's really helpful. And my well yes this week is like mindful eating. I'm a huge fan of trying to be present and like really tasting the food that we eat. And I have this sort of, I always had this instinct that, and I'm not sure what your perspective is like, but like the foods we crave, if we eat normal and clean and we really, I think our bodies will tell, I crave a strawberry, for example. And then because that probably has a micronutrient that you need, or I really feel like a steak and I don't know why, but I really feel like a steak. So maybe like I need to bring up my B12 levels, you know, whatever it is. Right. And what's your take around that? This sort of mindful eating, but also like really tuning into the concept of like paying attention to what you crave.
Yes. Very, very important. And also can be challenging to do. Mm-hmm. I think if you can tap into that. And that's why I always say, go back into your body. Your body is so much wiser from your neck down than up in your head. We're very analytical in our mind, but our body has a lot of wisdom if you can tap into it. I think I also find a lot of people are so dysregulated in their nervous system and they're always on that like high alert that it's really hard to tap into your body because your body's a place you don't like to be in. You don't feel safe. There's so many things that come up. So it's, I just say that because sometimes I feel like people get really hard on themselves and they're like, but I can't tap in. And it's like, no, not everyone can. Sometimes you have to kind of step back and do some regulation and nervous system control to then be able to even think about intuitive eating or, you know, tapping in. So I just want to put that out there so people don't feel like, oh, there's something wrong with me. Like,
yeah,
you know, sometimes we just need, again, that expanded toolbox to be able to get into the messages of the body.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. And I think like as long trying to be present specifically around mealtime is really powerful, where you just sort of like sit down, you're taking a break, you don't. And again, I understand that people's lifestyles can be extremely challenging and hectic and all this, but like take about 10 minutes. I mean, think about it, like breakfast, you know, take your 10 minutes and maybe stay away from your devices and put your phone down. Don't listen to anything that may, you know, raise your stress levels, and just, you know, look at the food you're eating, try it, enjoy the taste. Slow down. It's pleasure, right?
That's beautiful.
And if you can share your meal with someone, that's nice too, right? So like, and talk about life.
Connection.
I don't know.
Connection.
I think we need more connection, and also more, we need to disconnect to reconnect, really, you know, like from certain things. But anyway, I'm a big fan of that. All right, let's conclude with our rapid fire. You know how this goes. I have like a few items for you, and I would love to understand which of the following will really raise your what's bad for glucose spikes and what's, you know, what doesn't really create those glucose spikes. And so a 10 is a good thing and a 0 is really bad. So I'm really curious. Okay, let's start with tomatoes.
3.
Right. That's pretty bad. Potatoes.
Wait, 3 is bad?
Well, 10.
10 is good.
10 is good. And then.
Okay, no. Sorry. Tomatoes, 8.
8. Okay, good. So it doesn't, you know, this means, I know it's a bit complicated.
It doesn't spike your blood sugar.
So it doesn't spike. Okay, got it. So I was confused. It's like, I just had a tomato for breakfast. I felt so good about it.
No, you're good. You're good.
potatoes.
It depends if they're cooked or cooled.
All right. So
let's give them a 6.
Like a cooked potato. Like what is that? What does it do?
A 4.
Okay, so that's bad. And a cold potato, it sounds even worse then. Is that true?
An 8. No, cold potato is better because there's more resistant starch.
Okay, so if I have a meal and I cook my potatoes and I leave them in the fridge overnight, and it's actually better to eat the cold potatoes. See,
better for your blood sugar.
I'm so glad we're having this chat because I, you know, people say like, oh, you mustn't, they're toxic when you leave them overnight and they get cold and all this. So that's,
into holes in every scenario, but as far as blood sugar regulation, good.
All right. Agave.
3.
Okay, so that tequila is not the best for my blood sugar. Okay, oat milk.
Well, tequila is not the carbohydratey part.
oat milk.
Bad. 0 or 1.
All right, that's, you can go negative if you really don't like it.
Yeah, no, oat milk is bad.
All right. Sourdough bread.
Ooh, I would give that a 6.
Rice.
Cooled rice, we'll give it an 8. Hot rice, maybe a 5.
Interesting. So similar to potatoes, you're having this, you know, it's different whether it's okay. So sushi good with the cold rice.
Sushi is good and it also has vinegar, which also slows digestion. So.
How about oatmeal?
Oatmeal, a 6 or a 7. Overnight oats, an 8. Because again, the resistant starch is going to be there when it's not cooked, when it's just absorbed.
Okay. And then last but not least, yogurt. I actually want to add another one, but let's do yogurt first. Then
I would give an 8 or a 9.
And how about dark chocolate? I love dark chocolate.
A dark chocolate for me is a 10. It's the best food ever. That can spike your blood sugar. I would say 3.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Well, listen, Sarah, as always, it's been a real pleasure, and it's been super, super insightful. I learned a lot today, and I'm sure everybody has been listening to this podcast as well. If you crave more, then please subscribe to this podcast and follow us, give us a like, ask any comments. We'll try to address them in our next podcast. And also check out Sarah's Instagram account, Fearless Fig. It's really, really interesting. It's full of great gut health tips. And I found it particularly useful when it comes to managing my my gut health. So give that, take a look at that. But Sarah, as always, it's been such a pleasure. Have a super time on the East Coast with your son. And I speak to you very soon.
Sounds good.